be taking a passage out of Matthew 5, starting in 33, five verses, starting in Matthew 5, 33. Again, you have heard that the ancients were told, "You shall not make false vows, but shall fulfill your vows to the Lord." But I say to you, make no oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by earth, for it is the footstool of his feet, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you make an oath by your head. You cannot make one hair white or black. But let your statement be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything beyond these is of evil.
Good morning on this chilly morning. It's good to see those of you out this morning. This morning we're going to continue our looking at different lessons that Jesus spoke about on the Sermon on the Mount. And today we come to a passage where Jesus is addressing how the teachers of the law and the Pharisees were incorrectly teaching about oaths and promises based upon the wording in the law of Moses. And in this case, he's focusing on how they were teaching the people to be trustworthy and how they were wanting them to show their honesty or that their trustworthiness. And in that first verse of what Gary read for us, it says, "Again, you've heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn.'" Here Jesus is quoting what the teachers and the Pharisees had been telling the people. And in this case, it appears that they are quoting fairly accurately what the Old Testament writings had indicated. There's two that we're going to focus on or reflect upon mostly this morning. It's Leviticus chapter 19, verse 12. It says, "You shall not swear by my name falsely, and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord." And then in Numbers chapter 30, verse 2, "If a man vows a vow to the Lord, or swears an oath to bind himself by a pledge, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth." Further, we need to note that the law did allow the people to make vows and oaths by the name of the Lord. That was not part of the inaccuracy that was being taught. And we see that there is condemnation for those that are taking oaths, but they must fulfill them. They cannot make them a false oath or break their oath if they're going to make an oath on the name of the Lord. And this is also confirmed in Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 20. "You shall fear the Lord your God. You shall serve him and hold fast to him, and by his name you shall swear." So completely accurate, that part of it, you were told to swear on the name of the Lord. And that's a key point that we want to just keep in mind as we go through this morning. But as we read here in Matthew chapter 5, in verses 34 through 36, we're kind of getting a sense of what the people were being taught and what they were doing and why it is that Jesus feels the need to address them. And instead of just focusing on an oath on the name of the Lord, we're given the indication here that they were giving an oath based upon many other things instead. They would make an oath by heaven, or they would make an oath by earth, or by Jerusalem, by their head, and so forth. All these things that were not acceptable based upon the law upon which to make an oath. And so when we review some external Jewish teachings, we can find that we get an even clearer understanding of what was happening here. They would make an argument that a vow made by Jerusalem was non-binding, but a vow made toward Jerusalem was binding. And then later, Josephus, who I think most of us recognize as being a first century scholar, a Jewish scholar, He was talking about the Essenes, and the Essenes avoided making an oath of any kind at all. And he said, any word of theirs has more force than an oath. Swearing they avoid, regarding it worse than perjury. For they say that one who is not believed without an appeal to God stands condemned already. And so there were lots of different thoughts about this. And like I said, Josephus is talking about the Essenes who didn't take a vow at all. If you basically, they're saying, if your word depends upon you taking a vow, well, then you've already lost. you're already untrustworthy. And so Jesus later on in Matthew 23 would expand upon this thought even further. So if we look at Matthew 23, starting in verse 16, we'll read down through 22. Matthew 23, beginning in verse 16. Woe to you, blind guides, who say, if anyone swears by the temple, it is nothing. But if anyone swears by the gold of the temple, he is bound by his oath. You blind fools, for which is greater, the gold or the temple that has made the gold sacred? And you say, if anyone swears by the altar, it is nothing. But if anyone swears by the gift that is on the altar, he is bound by his oath. You blind men, for which is greater, the gift or the altar that makes the gift sacred? So whoever swears by the altar swears by it and by everything on it. And whoever swears by the temple swears by it and by him who dwells in it. And whoever swears by heaven swears by the throne of God and by him who sits upon it. Now we're, I think, finally at a point where we have a good understanding of what was going on here in the first century. They would read the commands in Leviticus 19 and Numbers chapter 30, and they would take it to mean that if you made your oath to the Lord, then you must keep what you have vowed. But if you made your oath based on something else or someone else, then you did not make your vow to the Lord, and that could be broken. That could be something that would not need to be held. And it's kind of like, I think most of us probably experienced this when we were kids. You would have someone make a deal or a promise to another person, and then when they didn't fulfill it, they would say, I had my fingers crossed behind my back. In kids' logic or kids' society, that meant you didn't have to uphold what you promised, and it was shame on you for not realizing I had my hand behind my back. What do you think I was doing? That's what they were doing. And so in the same way, according to the Jewish leaders, you could get out of vows that you had made by promise or vowing on something other than the name of the Lord, and you weren't going to be held to account for that. And so this is what Jesus is observing and condemning here in Matthew chapter 5. He's saying, do not take an oath by heaven as a means to get out of what you are vowing, because heaven is where the throne of God is located. He says, do not take an oath by earth, because the earth is God's footstool. He was created by God, and he had dominion over it, and you should not vow by that. Do not take an oath by Jerusalem, because it is the city of the great king. Now, there weren't kings at that moment, but that's what Jerusalem was established for. He says, do not take an oath by your head, because you can't do anything about your hair. You can't make your hair turn white or black, and so you have no power over that, and that should not be something upon which you would vow. He says, don't make an oath like this, because everything belongs to God. Anything that you would vow upon or make an oath upon belongs to God. Heaven and earth belongs to God. Jerusalem belongs to God. The hairs on your head belong to God. And so anything upon which you would be making an oath has some connection to God, and you shouldn't be doing that, using that as a way to get out of trying to keep your deal. And so everything is God's, and therefore every oath, every vow you would take is binding. So verse 37 then brings us to what God actually wants people to focus on and what their heart should be looking towards. And he's telling you that God's people are to be truthful and honest every day. Just yesterday, I stopped at the bank after I took Shelley to work, and I always go in and get my money for church this morning, and that I always, well, and then we're leaving to go out of town on Thursday, so I wanted to get some extra cash and so forth. And I went in and I told the teller how much I wanted, and I, and when he counted it back, I said, you're $100 too short. You know, you didn't give me as much. Oh, okay, I'm so sorry. So he went back over to his desk and he counted some more money out. Then he came back and he counted it back out to me, and now he'd give me $100 too much. He must have been having a rough day. He looked kind of new. I'm not sure about it. But I said, here, this is yours. I said, I don't want you to be $100 short at the end of the day. And most people would have just smiled and walked. Well, there are a number of people, I should say, would have just smiled and walked out with an extra $100 in their pocket. But as a child of God, I have to be honest. I have to be truthful. And it didn't bother me one bit to see that $100 walk back over to his desk. The purpose of an oath was to guarantee that whatever it is you were promising or whatever you were agreeing to, that purpose of that oath was that it would be fulfilled. But the Jews were using it as a method of getting out of getting out of keeping that promise. And so God's people, though, their speech is to be focused upon, we have to make sure that what we say we're able to fulfill. It has to be very plain and very straightforward. Because every word we utter, we talked about how the heaven belongs to God, earth belongs. Well, we belong to God, and so every word we utter, God is going to be aware of it, and we will be subject to the consequences from our words. Matthew chapter 12, verses 36 through 37 says, I tell you, on the day of judgment, people will give account for every careless word they speak. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. What I take from that, and especially in light of how Jesus is talking here in Matthew 5, the word careless there is very, very important. We should be very measured in what we respond. We should be very sure of the words that are coming out of our mouth, that it is what we need to be focusing on and that it is what we are able to do and to fulfill. And just saying a simple yes or a simple no and not some elaborate vow doesn't make our word any less of an obligation for us to keep. And that we should tell the truth and we should honor it by just speaking it rather than relying upon or falling back on some oath. Like the Essene said, if you were needing to give an oath, then you've already lost the battle. And oaths never were intended to give any indication that, well, I really mean it this time. If I've sworn an oath, I mean it. I'm going to do it this time. That obligation already existed, whether you said an oath or not, as soon as the words left your mouth. Oaths are rather, they were just some kind of an assurance to the person to whom you were giving it that you were going to fulfill your obligation. And if you think about it, this is exactly what God did to us, well, to those in the Old Testament. Hebrews chapter 6, verses 13 through 18, the Hebrew writer tells us, surely I will bless you and multiply you. And thus Abraham, having patiently waited, obtained the promise. For people swear by something greater than themselves, and in all their disputes an oath is final for confirmation. So when God desired to show more convincingly to the heirs of the promise the unchangeable character of his purpose, he guaranteed it with an oath, so that by two unchangeable things, in which it is impossible for God to lie, we who have fled for refuge might have strong encouragement to hold fast to the hope set before us. When God made his promise to Abraham, he had no one greater than himself to swear by, so he swore upon himself. And we have to then ask, well, why did he do this? Why did he give this oath on himself when he gave the promise to Abraham? Was it so God himself would say, okay, now I really need to do this? No, because once God says something, it's true and it's going to happen. And in Hebrews tells us that God desired to show more convincingly to the heirs of the promise the unchangeable character of his purpose. So the purpose of the promise is to give greater assurance to whomever that you are giving that oath. That's why we read about God making oaths to his people. He's convincing them and assuring them that if you keep your end of the bargain, the Lord would keep his. And so the point that Jesus is making, as a follower of the one true God, your words are binding upon you. And that's what we need to focus upon. James chapter 5 and verse 12 says, "But above all, my brothers, do not swear, either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under condemnation." James is telling us here that when you say yes, that's what you better mean. And when you say no, that's what you better mean no. And we don't get to avoid our obligations simply because of some oath that we made or whatever. And we have to realize that we will fall under condemnation based upon our words. When Jesus says, "Do not take an oath at all," and when James is saying the same thing here in James chapter 5, the point is not to say that making an oath is a sin, but that it shouldn't be necessary. Because when we make oaths, because when we see that God did make an oath, he fulfilled it. And so Jesus is saying here that when you say yes, it means the same as if you spoke it by an oath. And so you don't say something recklessly, you don't say something in a particular way, you don't say it with your fingers crossed behind your back. You should say it because you know that your word is true and you will fulfill your obligation. We're bound by the words that we speak. And so, just on the side, as I was just doing some research, I've never really considered, you know, there are people that say you shouldn't put your hand on the Bible and swear an oath in the court of law. Well, if taking an oath can assure the people in the jury box that what you're saying is honest, sometimes it is necessary for people who especially don't know you and your character, that it is something that people are you know, do expect that to happen. And so whether that's something you want to or comfortable with doing, that's your own call. But the idea is that when you do that oath in the, you know, when you're in a jury trial or something, when you give your testimony, that can assure them that you are going to be speaking the truth. And so when Jesus says, "Do not take an oath at all," we have to read the rest of verse 34. As God's people, we must have the character that when you tell somebody something, they will believe you. And we should not have to go out of our way. We shouldn't have to convince someone that what you're saying they can believe. If you've gotten to that point where people aren't believing you, well, then you've got a lot of ground to make up. And so you should be able to work on that and get to the point where if you promise something, you're fulfilling it, and you only can get that trust back by starting to uphold that. We should always, as Christians, be truthful. We should always be honest. But for those that don't know us, someone that maybe we encounter at the bank, or, you know, just in our daily lives, or maybe in a court situation, you have to provide some additional assurance to them that you're going to do what you say, then make your oath to God to give them greater assurance if that's necessary. And make sure that those who listen concerning about what you're going to say, they can have faith in. Brother Jose has the prayer, and we'll pause here for a few moments before our Bible class after that prayer.